Welcome to Women in WP,
a bi-monthly podcast about women who blog, design, develop, and more in the WordPress community.
Welcome to Women in WP. This episode is sponsored by Ninja Forms, a professional form builder plugin for WordPress that allows you to make beautiful forms with ease. I'm Angela Bowman.
And I'm Tracy Epps.
Our guest today is Raffaella Isidori, a creative polymath who has been designing, consulting, building brands, optimizing communications for businesses around the world, and producing awesome events for over three decades. Welcome, Raffaella.
Thank you, and ciao from Italy.
We like to start off each episode asking our guests how they got into WordPress. How did you get started?
Well, I started, I guess I dibbed a little with WordPress, but not really, not seriously, before 2016. And then let's say that the years before 2016 have been rather interesting, but that could be a whole other podcast. In 2016, a friend of mine invited me. Well, actually, she just told me that she was involved with organizing the first WordCamp in Torino. And she said, why don't you come over? And so you visit and you come to WordCamp. And I was like, what's WordCamp? And I guess that's how it all started, because after that, I've been to many WordCamps and I got closer to WordPress. And I obviously started to using WordPress a lot more also for my clients and for myself.
Wow. That's fascinating, because, you know, many of us, like, I didn't know there was a WordPress community. And I did the same thing. It was like WordCamp, set for like writers. It was one of those. I was like, okay, well, that's really, really cool. So how was your first experience as a WordCamp? Did you go to any talks, or what was that like, especially coming from like no WordPress development before?
Well, it was, I'm trying to remember, because it feels like ages ago. It was very interesting in the sense that I was, again, you know, WordPress was something that I had, like, I think I had opened a little blog that I never wrote into, you know, on WordPress. And I remember just kind of going like, ooh, this is cool. And I actually heard, you know, a few talks that were all right, you know, that I don't remember. But I remember listening to a woman that after became a friend, and she's also a developer. So we just recently did, you know, a few projects together. So because as I grew, since I'm a designer and I'm not technical, I can put together a website on WordPress. But if I can not do it and have a WordPress developer do it, I am so much happier. And of course, I do a bunch of stuff that I would not dare do if I have to actually do it, you know, put it together. So I remember this feeling of wow. But I have to say that this was April. I think November. And then I got tickets for the upcoming WordCamp Europe, which was the one in Vienna. And I decided, okay, I'm going to go, you know. And again, it wasn't easy. You know, my life was really, had been really complicated. And I remember arriving in the square in Vienna and they're really having this like, oh my God, I'm home kind of feeling.
Wow.
Yeah.
In that. Vienna. Yeah.
In Vienna. And it was just like, oh, all these weird people, they're like me, you know, family. that really sort of changed my mind. And then from then I became pretty involved with the community And I was pretty involved with the community up until, you know, 2019. You know, and then it got, you know, and then, you know, my work picked up, you know, more in other contexts. And then, and so, and I got a little, you know, out of it and out of touch. And of course, the last 2 years have been kind of like in zombie land.
Yes. Oh, it's so hard being in this limbo. So I'm looking at your website and you have, you do these logo designs, branding designs. They're incredibly beautiful. Like you're very talented designer. And you call yourself a polymath. How did you make that transition from doing maybe what was more print design, where you're doing logos and collateral material for businesses, to getting into UX, UI, and how, what has helped you to grow in that space?
Well, I must say that I have age on my side, because I've been working for over 30 years in the design context. And I studied advertising design, and I started with that. I started in advertising as an art director. And then I started freelancing in 1998. And obviously it was pre-everything. It was like the Mesozoic. I mean, we worked with computer, but there was no, you know, no real. I remember I went, I think it was 97, something like that. I met some people. I don't recall the details, but I remember meeting these people that they were working on internet, and it was like HTML1. And so I proposed them to do a little exchange, that I was going to go in like for one day or two, just to see what they were doing. And they were gonna show me, and I was going to show them or give them whatever feedback. And one thing I remember is that I arrived and someone was doing a page, and it was all caps, all these like long text in all caps. And I was like, don't do that. Do not do that. That's like not readable at all, unless you don't want people to read it. But then again, you know, we could get into this. And then, you know, as you know, I did print mostly, I did branding, and I did, you know, marketing design and some sort of, you know, supporting my clients. I've always worked with like rather small clients. Because I liked the idea. I hated it. I was in advertising for like, well, I was in advertising when I left New York. I went to school and I lived in New York.
Oh, wow.
And I was working at McCann Erickson, and I loved it. And then for the stupidest reason why a woman lives in New York, works at McCann Erickson, and goes back to Italy, which is a man, obviously, I moved back to Italy. And then, you know, I just kind of like tried to get into the advertising. This was 1992. It wasn't a good moment at all. But in 1993, I went to work as an art director in the largest Italian advertising agency, which is called Armando Testa. And I was there for almost 2 years, and I hated it. I mean, I hate it with a passion. It was just like, I don't want to do this. This is not me. I don't want to do it. And so, you know, I did a few other jobs as art director, getting, you know, more seniority. And then in 1998, I started my own business freelancing. And then I had this... And I go back to the small clients, because I liked that I was working with the client, with the decision maker, which I didn't get to do when I was working in advertising.
Yes.
And so then things evolved. And obviously I made my first websites around 2000.
Yeah, that sounds right.
you know, and obviously they were made with Flash, not by me, but they were super graphic because, of course, Flash allowed for that. So I had all these nifty animations and then things just kind of progressed, you know, depending on the client's needs and on, you know, whatever the circumstances were. And then I was always kind of weary of, you know, coding. And then in 2009, I started my master's. I was accepted at SCAD, at the Savannah College of Art and Design. And I majored in motion media design.
Wow.
But I also kind of auto-minored in web design, in the sense that every web design class that they had, I took it. And for many of them, I was like, I just cannot wrap my head into it. It was just, and then as always happened, I had like the teacher and she was able to make me understand. And from there it was like, whoa, okay, I got it. And so from that point on, it was easier, and it was also easier and obviously helped me when I started with WordPress, you know, having a clue about HTML and CSS and all this stuff. So, and then for a long time, I looked at user experience designers on LinkedIn saying, what's a user experience designer? I don't get it. Imposter was like pumping hard, And then I realized that I was an experience designer, and I got better at it. And for the past couple of years, I've mostly done experience design. And for most of the projects, I was supported, by developers, which obviously changes the world, you know, because it's a lot cooler when you can just be free to design and someone is brilliant and they can take your design and do things with it.
Yeah.
Tracy can relate to that, I'm sure.
I was sitting there and I'm thinking, I'm like, I had the same kind of progression of like seeing you user experience designers, like, what does that entail? And then I was looking at that because when I was in college, I did the same thing. I took all the web design classes. I got my degree as literally a BA art. Because my design teacher said I would never be a designer. I had a Flash web development instructor told me I would never be a web developer. And so but I was doing all the stuff on the side and realizing once I saw that term user experience, I was like, that's what I've been doing because I care about the, like you said, like the animation, the motion of it, because that is a part of the design. It's also part of like kind of development to understand how, like, at least the concept of it. And so that was like also an aha moment. I also remember at least I was dabbling in web development and HTML back in 1996, but I remember people in the design department that were more print focused and they had a really hard time translating that to the web because it makes you like have to like kind of basically give up some control, right?
Yeah. And it's just like a different way to think. It's just like a really different, you know, I don't know if I can think of a metaphor, it's like walking and then walking in mud or water, you know, you're still walking, but it's not, you can't rely on what your body knows about walking on earth, and it's different. The other thing that I think I was listening to you and it just dawned on me that a lot of it was that digital design kind of appropriated a whole bunch of terms and change them. And all of a sudden, you know, I remember like, oh yeah, you know, you gotta have the storytelling. And I'm like, yeah, you know, yes, obviously, you know, yes. And it's like, you know, I come from advertising. Let's talk about this. You know, we just called it having an idea, having a concept, you know, and obviously it was a story.
Yep.
And I remember distinctly the, you know, coming into contact with the information architects and just kind of going, whoa, information architecture. And it's like, well, I've been doing it. You know, if you do graphic design, you don't learn information architecture, but you learn principles, you know, gestalt principles of size of, you know, something bold is bigger than it, and, you know, and you learn that you have to give priorities to things. So you have to architect the information on your printed work. So I kept saying like, oh, okay, so this I know, it can't be it, because why would they give it a whole different, it must be something bigger and different that I do not know nothing about, you know, again, the imposter going, would you know?
Yeah. I mean, that makes a lot of sense. Cause you know, I think something that really clicked in for me, cause I don't have a design background. So I did come from more the computer technical thing and learned HTML back in 1996, and which was way before, I mean, websites were pretty boring then.
Well, but, at least any of the sites that I made, they were not
they
just good.
They might have like a logo or something, but it was pretty much straight up text, and you know, it was information. But when I worked for Quark, do you know Quark, makers of Quark Express?
Yes.
So I worked in Quark tech support.
Oh.
And so that's how I kind of got into the design world, was being a tech support person and having to write all the technical notes for Quark back, like when they had their big releases and we had to write, you know, oh, oops, we didn't have this in the documentation. So I was like attracted to design. And when you work for a software that does design, like in our department, we'd have contests like to design things. And I'm like, I'm just going to try this. And I actually really enjoyed it. And so I kind of learned, I learned through copying. I'd buy these books that had, back then it was a big deal to buy books in the graphic design department at the bookstore of like, you know, really cool brochure designs, you know, so I'd collect all the business cards, all the, here's 3,000 cool business cards. And so I'd buy these books and I'd study them. And if I had needed to make a brochure for someone, I would just copy. So I learned design through copying kind of other designs and borrowing. And it taught me some principles, but I still, like, faced with a blank web page, just with, it was so hard. It was so, so hard. So I took a 5-week class with a friend who is a very good, well-trained designer like you. And she taught us about hierarchy and she taught us about color. You know, it was just like, she broke it down into these, like, oh, this is kind of, it's not just this creative flow. There's a meaning to this madness. There's a reason it works. It's not just creative gibberish. And so with that hierarchy of design, and you're talking about information architecture, I think you are starting to tap into, when you start to break down what's the priority of this information, then you go to the third dimension, which is the relationships. You know, now, and how does this piece of data relate to this piece of data, and how can we organize it so it's more systematic and archivable?
Well, actually, you know, in my opinion, of course, design, it's actually quite scientific. You know, it's a method. You know, it's a method, a methodology to approach something. And art is really kind of like very distant from design. I'm from the school that does not consider designer artist, which doesn't mean that a designer can also be an artist, but I don't think design is art, simply because art is self-expression and design is, it banalizes when people say design is problem solving, but is actually more than problem solving, is actually structuring a solution to something that can be used by other people. So the focus when you make art is you. The focus when you design is the people that are going to use that design.
Wow. Absolutely. Yeah, it's absolutely. And when I started off in engineering and then I came a UX designer, and I was like, it's like the same thing. You're designing systems, but with creative means as opposed exactly. to like architecture or something. Yeah. Right. Like, yeah.
And we had a quote on our last episode about this where the person said, some of the challenges in working with graphic designers and coding websites for them is they're trying to be artists and express themselves. And it's like, you have to go to this quote designer and say, it's not about you. It's not about your creative expression. If you want to be creative, go somewhere else and do this creative expression thing you want to do. But this, you need to keep it simple here and make it functional for the user. And it was just kind of mind blowing, because as a person who has to code sites that designers create, you know, I'm that person that Rafaela needs to make things happen. It can be really hard to talk, you know, tell the designer, whoa, you need to back off, because this is not going to be responsive. I understand it's very, very, very pretty, but it's not very functional. It's not going to be usable on, you know.
Yeah. You have to be creative in a different way. It's not like.
It's not about you.
Yeah, exactly. I like that.
Yeah. And, you know, on that, it always kind of puzzles me that if you're a designer, a graphic designer, you understand that. You may not understand what the limits are for, you know, that media, because it's a different medium, you know, but when you're a graphic designer, you have restraints. So you understand restraints. So maybe it's just wanting things to be magic more than, you know. I worked recently with, I love her. I did the website for my friend that I was mentioning that I met at WordCamp. She is a costume designer, and she does this. I mean, she does really, you know, really big projects for theater. She's worked for Olympic Games. She's worked, you know, and so she's artsy, and she does, you know, sometimes get away with this, like, oh, you know, but then, you know, you can sort of, if you use her kind of design to sort of bring her back. But so I did all this, you know, we did her website, we put it online, and then we had agreed she had a lot of content that she was going to get somebody else to put the content in, which she never did. So right now she's online with this, like, you know, lorem ipsum thing. And I'm like, Sylvia, you gotta, you know, I mean, can we just put the suit online on? And she's like, no, this is like the Dadaist thing I've done in my life. I'm loving it. And I was like, okay. So great. She managed to have an art statement by like not having, you know, real content or having pieces of real content and pieces of lorem ipsum.
She should have done hipster ipsum.
She's more bacon ipsum.
Oh, she's wild.
Yeah. That's really funny.
Hey, Women in WP listeners. This is Tracy with a quick message from our sponsor, Ninja Forms. Wish you could build forms for WordPress without spending forever or recruiting help? You can. Ninja Forms is the WordPress form plugin that is both extremely flexible and easy to use. Create contact forms, order forms, donation forms, and more in literally minutes using pre-built templates. Easily customize with form logic, upload fields, multi-step pages, and more. Just drag and drop what you need where you need it. Integrate with hundreds of services like MailChimp, Google Sheets, HubSpot, and more without needing to write a line of code. Get NinjaForms now at ninjaforms.com. And now, back to our show.
You know, that's funny too, but if you think about that kind of like restraints, but also you think at it being creative, you want to create for whatever the design is, and it has to be applicable. So like, I might want to use all of the colors, but if it's a lawyer's database, and it looks like a kindergartner's website, like, just because I wanted to use all the colors, like, that's not a very successful design anyway.
Yeah. But I remember, you know, I used to tell, you know, sometimes, you know, sometimes, you know, you have clients that they don't understand. And so that's part of the process, especially, for example, when you do branding and you try to make them understand that your choices are never, you know, oh, I ran out of the blue marker, so I did a green marker, you know, which is sometimes people, I think that that's how it works. But again, that's why I'm saying there's a lot of science, you know, that design. Yeah. I remember once I had a client, this was years ago, who had this like big hotel with restaurants and everything. And so I did this kind of system, you know, it was a small design system for all the activities that were all separate with their own, you know, logo and their own thing. And then he was like, you know, for the restaurant, we use the green. And he was like, well, I hate green. And I was like, well, don't buy furniture in green. I mean, who cares? I don't care if you hate green. It's not your living room and it's not your clothes. You know, you have to use a language that people understand. And we have a background of semiotics and meanings and symbols that we associate with things. So what you like is totally irrelevant. You know, it's like, yes. Oh, okay, you know, don't buy green furniture or don't buy green clothes, you know, but, you know,
that is exactly what we were talking about last week. And that was also mind blowing that you could actually say that to a client, that mm-hmm. it doesn't matter in a way, even what the client likes, it's what mm-hmm. works for the web. Yeah.
And one of the things that I learned early on, because I made this mistake as an early designer, you know, consulting, and, you know, I would make a couple designs and I'd present them to the client. Because I was, you know, that imposter syndrome, right? All right. So I don't know, they're going to choose the better one, right? Well, no. And then I would be like, well, what do you think of this? And that was like, no, don't ever do that. Like, then when I realized, because then I would get all this pushback, and then it was like, change this and then move this and then do this. And I literally was just like changing things.
You
and
were
sending
a pixel
it
pusher.
And changing it.
Yeah,
exactly. And I was like, no, wait a minute. Like, there's a reason why I did this. And so instead of just presenting it to the client, I would sell it to them and explain. So because of your clientele or your messaging or your bottom line goals, this is, and then a little bit of the science behind it, this was the design choice that will achieve that goal of yours. And then I would say, did I miss anything from your goals or misunderstand any of your, you know, your goals or your business goals or your clients or whatever? And I got so much less pushback of, I wish that was purple. Like, yeah.
But that's the right way to do it, you know, because the idea is that people come to you because they know they are not able to do it themselves. Otherwise, they would do it themselves. And very often they do. And you can tell, you know. And then, so one of the things that I've learned with age, which has a lot of perks, and experience is one of it, is that I generally, I mean, having done this, especially branding, I've been doing it for so long that it's really sometimes like I get the solution clear in my head almost right away. And sometimes I know that's the right thing. And sometimes I have to push myself to come up with like a couple of other options, you know, because I feel like I should have more than one option, but I have, you know, the solution clear in my head. And I've learned that, you know, yes, you explain things. And then, you know, sometimes you let them sort of make wishes. And then if there's something you can, you know, sometimes when I was younger, when I was younger, I was more like, no, this is it. And then I've learned that it's like, okay, so you want it a little bigger, a little, you know, okay, you know, because sometimes it really doesn't matter. I mean, it really makes no difference, but you make them happy. Or sometimes another thing that I do when they're really stubborn, I show them. And I was like, okay, this is what you want. And they see then that it's not working. And but I only do this either if I really like them or if I'm getting paid enough to do this, because this is like all useless. You know, it's a waste of time educating you. So it has to be either in the fee or not.
You know, or you can build in some choices, like just in the process, like I'm going to give them a choice. And as long, my sense is that as long as clients, you kind of, sometimes I'll deliberately build in some mistakes because then I know they'll catch them. And then they feel like they've done their job too. Like if you give them no choices at all, they'll find something.
Yes.
But so you build in some choices or you build in some like truly awful thing that you know they'll catch so that then they're like, they contributed and they had a say and they feel like they participated and got their way. And so it you can strategically manipulate them this way. It works. I promise.
Yeah. Well, yeah. And another two things. One is, when I was younger, I would bring maybe like, oh, you know, one more idea, even if I didn't really like it. And I've learned that's the way.
That's the one they're going to choose.
They're going to pick.
Always. Every time.
Never give them a choice you can't live with. Like I tell everyone getting started that. Like don't present the alternate design that you don't like, because 100% they're going to go with that and you're going to be like, oh.
And always. The other thing that gets like a huge like no write off, you know, is the Frankenstein design, you know, like, oh, I mean, I really like this thing from here. And could we put it there? And it's like, no, you can't. Because otherwise I would have done it. So if it's there and not there, it's for this reason or that reason. And because otherwise that's like, you know, and sometimes you see something and you kind of get it that the client was really pushy and they wanted their vision and it really didn't work. And I don't know, like I can spot it sometimes. It was like, you know, even in advertising or sometimes, you know, you're like, Jesus,
like this was designed by committee.
You know, it is like this was the client's idea.
Yep.
And he was unwilling to budge. And so what's, you know, and so the people just said, okay, whatever, you know, just don't put it in your portfolio. And
yeah,
you know.
Exactly. Wash my hands of this and you're on your own.
You know, you mentioned that you connected with this woman in the WordPress community when she kind of brought you into the WordPress community and that you participated in the WordPress community, what ways do you feel like you've benefited from the community? And could you imagine if you hadn't ever gotten involved with the community, would things be less for you in some way?
Well, absolutely. In the sense that without getting into, you know, the story of my life, let's say that it was 2016. I went through a very, very bad experience with work. And I was basically cut in pieces professionally. I mean, there's a word for it in Italian, which is mobbing. I don't know what it's called in English. It's when you get abused at work, and it's really mental abuse and professional abuse. And so I was basically chopped up in pieces, and it took me about 7 years to heal. That's when I also went through my master's. That was part of the healing. And so when I kind of like stuck my little head out of the hole where I was healing, there was the community. And I was like, oh, okay, you know, let's go into this, you know. And I've met a lot of wonderful people. And I also had the opportunity to really finish healing, but also I started doing, you know, like I did a lot of talks and a lot of, I brought for a very long time, I was like, well, who's going to care about branding, you know, in the WordPress community? And I remember my first talk, which was about branding. And I remember the feeling of giving that talk and then people coming up and saying, oh, you know, I loved it. And I was just like, really? Wait, you know. So, the community helped me heal, helped me find a voice, helped me also kind of get to know the person that I had become, you know, because I basically found myself starting from below zero at 50. And so it wasn't easy. You know, there was a lot of hurdles and a lot of, I have to say that even though, you know, again, I'm not super young, but the WordPress community in terms of inclusivity, I have to say it's a very open community, and I've, you know, met a lot of people and I liked it a lot, and they certainly have helped me be, you know, where I am today.
I love that. I wish we could just talk and talk and talk, but I'm afraid our time is coming to a wrap up here. And I do look forward to seeing you at a future WordCamp Europe when we're all feeling a little braver, and Tracy will be there for sure. She can't make it to Porto this year, but she'll be to the next one. So can you tell people where they can find you online if they'd like to follow you?
Well, I have a very cute nickname that was given to me by a kid a long time ago, which is Zeta Raffix. That's Zetaraffix.
Love it.
And you can find me everywhere, on Twitter, on Facebook, on LinkedIn. I am rather weary of Facebook. So I have clients. So I go in. I go in and I see things and I run out before I get into arguments. I'm more active on Twitter, and I'm also not too fond of Instagram. So I know I'm kind of like offbeat. socially, but I can be found. And also, you know, my website is my name, RaffaeleIsidori.com. And from there, people can also find me everywhere, because I am everywhere. Not present, but everywhere.
I love it.
I love them spaces.
She can be found. So on the podcast episode, we'll have links to all of her socials and website. And thank you for joining us today.
Thank you very much. It's a great honor. I was really thrilled, you know, you guys reached out to me. And I look forward to seeing you both very soon. And yes, maybe in Italy, and if not in Europe, in some cool places. Hopefully all of us with a little lighter spirit, you know, a little less. Or maybe we can have like work camp Europe in Kyiv and have like a real blast.
Aww. Love that.
It's yes, like a, you know, mm-hmm, a cool place to just get together when all this thing is over.
Thank you for listening. Interested in being on the show? Sign up on our website, womeninwp.com. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram, and join our Facebook group to have conversations with other women in WordPress.